But we still judge it really harshly.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Molly Glover, Nick Glover, and Tim Wick.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week we're joined by our friend Jen Rogachevsky, who's here to talk to us about obsessive compulsive disorder and the differences between what the public thinks it is and what it really is.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Molly Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Nick Glover.
Party horn.
And Tim Wick.
Womp womp.
And today we are joined by a fabulous guest, one of our friends from Convergence, Jen Rogachevsky. Hello, Jen.
Hello.
So we've been, as you know, when we recorded live, we solicited topic ideas from the audience and we could only pick one. So we've been kind of working our way through people who wanted to still be on the show afterward. And it's very exciting. Jen is one of those people. And the topic she wants to discuss is the stigma of mental illness, in particular, her own mental illness. So, Jen, can you please tell us a little bit about what brings you to do this topic? And I guess, tell me your mental illness, Jen.
Sure. Yeah. So I have OCD, which is obsessive compulsive disorder, for those who don't know. I have pretty severe OCD. It started when I was a child, pretty mild then, and kind of as the years have gone on, which is, I think, common for OCD. I'll just state that I'm really just talking about my own experiences. Everybody who has OCD has a completely unique experience, and I don't want to discredit anybody's, but typically with OCD, it tends to get worse as you age. And so that's something that I experienced. It started off mild, got a little bit worse throughout middle school and high school. And then by the time I got to college, it got to a moderate point. And then I would say around 2019 is when it kind of shifted into pretty severe. I had kind of like a mental breakdown, which was fun. and then ever since then, I've been in therapy, just trying to deal with it. With OCD especially, it's such a the way that society kind of talks about it in media and whatnot, it's so it's kind of made to be like a joke in a way. And so
you love to clean. Yeah,
you know, oh, I'm so OCD. Oh, it's so quirky. I let the intrusive thoughts win.
I alphabetize my books.
And so because of that, when people think about OCD, they think about it as something that's like quirky, or could also be something that is, you know, like fun or positive or useful. And so when you have OCD, especially severe OCD, it can be really difficult to talk about it with people because they don't really understand what it actually is.
I feel like I've always had a little bit of a bit of personal experience empathy with that, with OCD, despite having no OCD at all myself. I'm dyslexic, and a lot of people joke about being dyslexic. Someone makes a spelling mistake, haha, I'm so dyslexic today. Like lots of shirts that like, oh, I put the sexy in dyslexia and stuff like that. And it's said very casually for something that's been a difficult thing for me for most of my life. And so like I've definitely been in a meeting in a professional setting with someone who's made a joke about dyslexia and said like, oh, I'm so dyslexic today. And like, all I can do is say like, yeah, I'm so dyslexic literally every day.
Or even worse, just go, ha, 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 yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I, while it's a different thing, I kind of feel like I really empathize with that, because it's a funny thing to people that haven't ever experienced it, or maybe don't have anyone in their life that has been affected by it.
How did you, so you, did you, were you diagnosed before 2019 or was 2019 when you really sought, you say you thought, sought therapy, you know, and is it more of a hindsight thing that you now know you, you suffered as a child, or is it something you knew for a long time?
Yeah. So a hindsight thing, I was officially diagnosed with OCD, I think 2021, but really I've only started, I think, a real effective treatment, the gold standard treatment for OCD is exposure and response prevention therapy. And so I've started that this year. I'm now seeing a psychologist who is an OCD specialist, which is so important when you have OCD to be seeing somebody who is a specialist and understands, especially because with OCD, a lot of the treatments that, you know, a standard therapist might do for anxiety or for something else can actually reinforce the OCD cycle. So you really need someone who knows what they're doing.
Absolutely.
So I originally, when I first started going to therapy, I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. And I actually, my first therapist, who I do appreciate, that she helped me a lot. But when I finally, I was still seeing her in 2019. And when I finally realized that I had OCD, because I had done some Googling of some of these intrusive thoughts that it was happening to me. And the what came up were all of these OCD forums. And it was like this really light bulb moment for me that was also very kind of stressful and intense. And I went in and I said, you know, to my therapist, hey, I don't think I have anxiety. I think I have OCD. And so my therapist told me, well, you know, I thought about that when you first came in, but let me look at the DSM and I'll look at it and we'll talk about it again next session. So I came in and she said, you know, I wouldn't diagnose you with OCD because I looked at the list and you meet every single criteria, except you have a relationship, you have a job, you have a social life. I wouldn't say that you have OCD because I have other clients who can't even leave their house.
Oh, oh my God.
Some people have it worse. So you couldn't have OCD, in her opinion.
Yeah, I had I had a really similar experience. So I describe myself as my eating disorder as being anorexia, which it was. But technically, I was never diagnosed with anorexia. I was diagnosed with EDNOS, which is eating disorder not otherwise specified, because I never stopped getting my period. So because my uterus chugged along and was like, we got you, girl, eggs coming. Because of that, I didn't ever meet the official DSM at the time four criteria for that, which was infuriating. Let me just tell you that. My therapist at the time was like, I'm going to tell you your diagnosis and it's going to make you really upset. And we're going to talk through those feelings once I tell you. And I'm like, okay. And he was like, it's not anorexia. And I'm like, shit. It's like, but yeah, it's very, the light bulb moment you talk about is very interesting. I had a similar thing when I was hospitalized for anorexia. I was given a bunch of tests because they were like, we think you have bipolar disorder. We think you have bipolar disorder one, based on the way that you're presenting here in the hospital. And no one had ever suggested that to me ever. And I hadn't really been to therapy. I mean, I went to a little bit of therapy when my parents divorced, but it didn't, you know, not like truly. And when I read through, I actually called Nick because we were dating. And I was like, I need you to read me the list. Go look and tell me what is bipolar. And he's reading me all these things. And I'm going, Oh, yeah. And I don't know if you watch Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, but it is an amazing show. And she has a song called A Diagnosis, where it can just make you feel the world is going to change. I have a diagnosis and everything will get better. And then, oh, there's still work.
Yeah, no, that song, yeah, really resonated with me too. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So when you're doing your therapy, and we actually talked just a little before the show, because we talked about this, you know, we're an atheist podcast, and you know, we talked about, you know, belief in God and how that plays into your OCD. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yeah.
If you're willing.
Yeah, totally. So with OCD, you have obsessions. So there's the intrusive thoughts and images that you can obsess about, you think about in your head. And that causes a lot of distress because OCD is an ego dystonic disorder, which means that these thoughts that you have go against your values, your morals, and whatnot. And that's why they're so distressing to you. And so to kind of combat that, you start doing these compulsions. And compulsions can be behaviors that are both mental and physical, that kind of make you feel like you have control or just make you feel better about the situation temporarily, because any compulsion that you do reinforces the thought and therefore reinforces the OCD cycle. So it just OCD.
Yeah.
There's different themes for obsessions or for compulsions. One of those themes is religious OCD. There's also like magical thinking or superstitious OCD that can kind of go into that as well. That can be things related to, not wanting to say something a certain way or something like that. For me, like, it's especially related to like karma or the idea of for some people, of God in general. So there's a lot of,
like, you have to be a good person, and if you're not a good person, you're going to have a terrible next life. And so you obsess about that?
Kind of. Well, for me, it's like, so I have a really hard time, like, wishing ill on anybody.
Oh, sure.
I'm afraid that if I say something negative about somebody else, it'll come back to me. It'll happen to me. Which is actually something that I've been talking to my therapist recently. So we've been doing some exposure in therapy, exposures on that. I'm able to say that as of last week, we were working on me saying, I hope Donald Trump gets a cold. Which I know is,
I don't mean to laugh at you, but yes, no, that's huge. Yes.
But typically if I say something like that, or I'll have an intrusive thought that's like very horrible about somebody, even if, you know, somebody else might say, well, they deserve it, or they're a bad person, I'll have to, I have to pray like typically a certain amount of times until it feels right. For me, that's like 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other things I do too. Like I have a huge fear of death. I have a really hard time sleeping because of that. And so, in order to like help myself sleep, before I go to sleep, I will have different, I have a certain set of prayers that I do. And so again, like, I'll pray 3 times. I'll say each thing 3 times before I fall asleep. For me, growing up, like, I've always been kind of like spiritual. I was raised Lutheran. I never really felt like that fit for me. So I studied abroad in high school, in Japan. And while I was there, I met a bunch of Jewish people. I learned about Judaism, and that really resonated for me. So, since then, I've kind of been on this journey to like join the Jewish faith. So there's like that part of me that does like believe in God, but, there's also, with my OCD and stuff, the worse that it's gotten, the more that I've struggled with it, I've realized there's also a big component of that, which is just that I need to believe in God. I need to believe that there's something after this, that you don't die and stop existing, because that fear for me is so paralyzingly terrifying that I really can't handle it. So I am curious, like, as I go through my therapy and hopefully like recovery, if there will be a point where, you know, maybe my beliefs in God will shift, you know, maybe I will be agnostic or an atheist. But as of right now, that's kind of where I'm at.
What was it about the Jewish faith that made you feel like that was a place for you, if I can ask?
Yeah. So, just a lot of things with Judaism like resonates for me. Within Judaism, there's a lot more of questioning of your faith, or struggling with it, like having an understanding and a knowledge of what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And having multiple different viewpoints, or just discussing things. You know, when I was growing up in confirmation and everything like that, I would ask questions about God, or I'd ask questions about the Bible, and it would just be like, well, that's what's in the Bible. That's what they say. That was never enough for me. So the fact that in Judaism, when you do Torah study, for example, you're actually not supposed to study by yourself. You're supposed to study with somebody else so that you actually debate and you think and you talk about it. And then also with Judaism, it's more about, it's not about just doing things in order to have like a good afterlife. It's, you know, wanting to really focus on, you know, life and now and, you know, having, you know, an obligation to kind of, you know, like heal the world and things like that. So just
everyone goes to the same place in Judaism. There's just Sheol. It's not a merit-based system. I can imagine how that would be really attractive to somebody whose brain is telling them, if you aren't perfect, horrible things are going to happen to you, right?
Yeah. So I think, you know.
Yeah.
For me, that just made sense.
Do you feel so out of I have intrusive thoughts. It's a problem I have as I have bipolar disorder. When I get manic, particularly, that's when my intrusive thoughts get worse. And for me, it tends to be my brain will make me will walk me through horrible things happening to me and make me feel and envision what it will look like. My dog's dying, you know, horrible things like that. The dog's dying is a big one. And really like. It is. I have a nightmare disorder on top of that. So I get you with the sleeping thing. It's really fascinating to me how many ways our brains try to fuck us.
You know, like betrayal.
The really fine line between, you know, let's say a delusional religious fundamentalism. You know, and somebody who's suffering from what they know is a diagnosed mental disorder is interesting. When, you know, I also, the thing that happens to me is we actually talked about it last week with Tony Miller, is this idea of a monkey's paw, that when you're wishing or praying, however you define that, you know, when you're putting it out there, that I feel like I have to be super specific. Otherwise, I will be like the way you think it'll come back on you. To me, it's like if I'm not super specific with my wish, and this happened to me when I was a little kid. I used to always wish on 11/11. That was a superstition I had. But in my brain, it was like I couldn't just say, I hope I'm happy for the rest of my life. I would have to be like, I hope I'm happy for the rest of my life. And my life is really long, but not so long that I don't like it. And also everybody loves me and everything is okay for everybody who is in my family. And so it's like. It just falls down the stairs of like being this long thing. When you're praying, do you feel, is that a compulsion you feel, or is it different for you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it just, you know, for some certain things with compulsions, it's like this just right feeling, mm-hmm. which is, I think a lot of people with OCD kind of describe it like that. And so it just really depends. There are times where, you know, if I'm saying something like, you know, I don't want to die tonight, or please don't let me die. You know, I have mm-hmm. to emphasize don't, because, you know, in my mind, it's like, oh, you know, what if God heard me and thought I said, I do want to die tonight. And that's, like I want to be misunderstood.
The prayer skipped out right when I said don't, and he didn't hear that part. Yes, I hear that. I get you. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, things like that. Yeah, for sure. It can, I mean, like with intrusive thoughts, you know, there are some of them that can be especially, it's like sticky. So mm-hmm. Which is another term I think people with OCD use. It just means like it's harder for you to like move on from it, or, you know, like not do the compulsions and stuff like that. So
yeah,
some can get a little sticky.
Have you felt, since this is a recent diagnosis for you, mine's less recent. I have you felt any pushback from your family and friends? Did it click for people when you told them and they were like, oh yeah, Jen, that makes sense for me when I think about it for you. I had a lot of, just as an example, I had a lot of pushback from my family, because especially my mother actually has OCD, funny enough, but a lot of pushback from her of me being diagnosed, because she felt like that meant she didn't see it. And if she didn't see it, it wasn't real. And so she was very like, are you sure you trust this psychiatrist? And I'm like, the hospital of psychiatrists, the six or seven of them. Yes, I do. You know, but, you know, have you had pushback, or have you felt like it's been a pretty accepting part of your journey?
It's been pretty accepting. I think the hardest thing is really for me talking about it. So, I finally got into a place where, you know, I don't have as much shame around it. I still have a lot of shame, but not as much as I used to. And so
that's part of it.
There were years where I didn't, you know, I told my husband, you know, the thoughts that I was having, the things that I was struggling with. I told a couple of friends. It was years kind of until I really told my family. Not necessarily because I thought that they would judge me, but because I was so ashamed of myself, it was just really hard to get the words out. And like the chances of them misunderstanding me was so terrifying that I couldn't take the chance. And so it's really been a recent thing, for me to be able to talk to them about it, freely. But they've been great.
I'm glad.
In terms of understanding and just welcoming me. The biggest thing, the hardest thing is because they're my family and they love me, they don't really, you know, they don't want me to feel distress. and sometimes, you know, that's counterintuitive because, you know, if I'm like reassurance seeking, which is a compulsion, then they're, you know, wanting to make me happy. But that, you know, again, like that just feeds the OCD.
It feeds it.
It's enabling. And so,
yeah,
that can be a little difficult. So
Tim and Nick, I know. So both of you, I've known you guys a long time and you both struggle with depression. Did you feel similarly, like telling, I know Nick, you struggled telling me, and Tim, did you struggle telling Pat? Did you struggle talking about it when you, when you realized it was happening?
I didn't struggle telling Pat because Pat told me.
Yeah.
She's like, Tim, you gotta go see a therapist. You're dealing with depression. And I was like, kind of like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Pat.
Which is really saying something because depression is one of the more accepted, you know, mental illness in the country.
Yeah, it is. And I would say that the hard thing for me, and probably, I mean, I don't know if Nick has experienced this too, and it may be a little bit of the way we raise, especially men in our society, is that I was like, I can deal with this. I recognize that this is a problem and I can fix it myself. You know, I don't need to go to therapy. I don't have time for therapy. I don't have time to.
And not because you don't believe in therapy or you think it's for pussies or anything.
No, it wasn't that at all. It wasn't like I was like, oh, you know, I'm a man. I don't have to go to therapy. Mm-hmm. But it really was more like, well, I got too much shit in my life to go to therapy. That's an hour out of my week.
Therapy's expensive, potentially. It's time consuming to get there, and then it's an hour of your time and
it costs money
like there's a limitless number of excuses to not go. And I think that might be a little bit the mental illness self-perpetuating sometimes.
Sure It's your own brain kind of saying, well, don't work on this. I don't need you to work on this. Just keep soldiering on.
I don't know if I had, I mean, it's hard to think of because, like, man, when I was diagnosed with depression and started medication up and everything for it, it's long enough ago where I have a very difficult time even like putting myself in the same mindset and thinking about how it impacted me then. And my memory isn't super stellar all the time either. So, you
if
know,
I may though, yeah. Recently. You struggled and had a hard time coming to me about it.
Yeah. Well,
you felt like it meant that you were failing at being good about it.
Yeah. Or it's, oh boy, it's not even necessarily a conscious thought.
Mm-hmm.
It is literally just mental illness self-perpetuating itself in a spiraling way where, you know, why am I not doing something about it? Why am I not saying something about it? When I know the support is there and I know the acceptance is there and I know the resources are there, I can afford to go to therapy. Why do I not do any of that? Not because I am consciously thinking it will make me lesser or that it'll occupy that time or anything like that. I'm literally not doing it because of the depression.
Yeah.
Like that is that. Why am I not treating my depression? The depression. And I think what restarted some mental health stuff for me was actually suspecting and having a lot of people in my life professionally and personally saying that I, you know, couch diagnosing and saying that I have attention issues and I might, you know, I have see a lot of, when I think people talk about attention deficit disorder or ADHD, I see a lot of myself in what they're saying.
You empathize.
I empathize, but it's, I was also diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder, and they are just saying like, yeah, you're a lot of this, like similar symptoms, but the cause is very mm-hmm. different. And, that was maybe a little bit more difficult for me, or maybe not. It was just more recent and I just remember it more clearly.
Yeah. Jen, so do you feel like, I know that bipolar disorder for me is when things get bad, eating disorder is worse, but my brain tells me to hide it. Do you feel that with obsessive compulsive disorder? Is part of your compulsion trying to keep it in the dark and trying to tell you, don't tell anyone about it, the way it is with depression and other disorders?
Well, I mean, OCD is a bully. So, mm-hmm. you know, you both have, you know, like you have these intrusive thoughts that are so scary. And your brain is kind of telling you just like, do the compulsion. Like you'll have mm-hmm. this.
You'll feel so much better.
Yeah. I mean, and you think that it is going to feel better, and it does feel better, but it's, you know, momentary. And then compulsion, and then your brain will be like, what the fuck were you doing for that? Like what's wrong with you? Why would you do something so weird? Like you're pathetic, you know?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, brain. That's So I don't really, in terms of that, I haven't necessarily like hid my OCD. I think it's just more related to like shame and stigma. Like,
yes.
Like for example, at work, I'm not like out about having OCD because, you know, it is stigmatized and again, people really don't understand, the thoughts that you can actually have, like the different themes, you know, because again, like, you know, people think OCD is about, you know, straightening your room or being clean. And when you come to them and you say like you have intrusive thoughts about potentially like harming someone or like hurting you know, you have weird thoughts about incest or bestiality. and people don't understand that is OCD. OCD is not just, I mean, and there's some, and I don't want to, there are people who do struggle with cleanliness and things like that, contamination OCD, but the other more taboo thoughts, that's also OCD. And because of the way that people talk about it, it just being a cleanliness thing, a lot of people don't realize that what they have is OCD.
Absolutely. And so,
you know, I think on average, between the start of symptoms and when somebody seeks treatment, it's about 15 years for people with OCD. And that's mm-hmm. because I believe that there's not enough awareness of what OCD actually is.
I had a really similar situation with me. I started feeling I can trace back to when I started feeling like something was wrong with me to when I was about 15. And I know I went to my mom and said, something's wrong with me. I can't stop thinking about horrible things. I feel crazy. I feel like I'm not in my own body. And you know, her response was, that's teenagers. It's just, everybody thinks that. And the old chestnut, if you think you're crazy, you couldn't be, because people who are crazy don't think they're crazy. And now that to me, I think is one of the more dangerous ideas that we've perpetuated in the world, is that if you don't think there's something wrong with you, then there's nothing wrong with you. Or if you think there's something wrong with you, there's nothing wrong with you. Because crazy people don't have any idea. I was so painfully aware the entire time that something was dramatically wrong with me. And the shame, it's interesting the way you talk about compulsions. I know that my therapist said they actually wondered about OCD with me at first, because it's so tied to bulimia. And I didn't have bulimia, but I had bulimic actions. I didn't binge, but I would throw up anything I ate. And that shame you're thinking of, like, and it still happens to me sometimes. If I overeat, or even if I just eat enough that my stomach feels too full, my brain goes, throw up, throw up, throw up, throw up, throw up. And it's just like a drum beat. It's just a constant drum beat in my head. And I have to, it's been almost 20 years. I mean, it takes active work to be like, no, I'm not going to. It's not going to help. Because at first, it feels so good. And then afterward, the shame and and the horror and the, oh, look at you. Here you are fucking again, like on the bathroom floor. And I think they're so closely tied in that way. It's very interesting. And I've seen a lot of TikTok stuff about intrusive thoughts. Like you said, letting the intrusive thoughts win because I bought Pokemon cards or like I let the intrusive thoughts win and I had two cheeseburgers. And it's like
impulsive.
And it's like, if I let the intrusive thoughts win, I would have cut off all my fingers while I was making salad because my brain went, how much could it hurt though? And like, you know, and I used to hurt myself all the time when Nick and I were dating. I talked to him about this a lot. I was like,
recklessly.
I often will be like, my brain would just go, and this still happens. I'll be like, I wonder what it would feel like to fall down these stairs. And I have to genuinely like hold the handle and be like, don't do it. Don't do it. And it doesn't matter how much better you get, quote unquote, you know, or how recovered you are. Those thoughts exist. And what you're learning is how to deal with them, you know, and how to move past them. I think people think you just get better and you just don't have it anymore. And that's certainly not the case for me.
I feel like with depression, it's interesting that the common public misconceptions are very much like polar opposites. Mm-hmm. Like there's a lot of people that are like, oh, everybody gets sad sometimes. Cheer up. Be happy. Treat yourself to something. Go for a walk.
There
are people that don't understand, like, you know, the inability to feel happy regardless of how good things are going is a chemical thing. I literally can't fucking feel happy. But then there's the other side of things where there are people that do take depression seriously, but are still pretty uninformed about it, who, when you say you have depression, they immediately assume suicidal ideation. They immediately assume
can't get out of bed.
You can't get out of bed. You can't live your life, you know, and some other things. And while absolutely that is the way depression is for many people, it's a broad spectrum of feeling this
like
way.
OCD, and like all like, things.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely. And so like people definitely have it in their heads that like this is what depression is, and that's not the case.
Yeah, I think the thing about depression also is the assumption that it's all the time, that you're always depressed, that you're always down. It's like, oh, Tim, you're such a positive person. You always seem like you're in a good mood. And it's like, well, number one, maybe I'm just pretending. But number two, I'm not always depressed. I mean, I always I'm always dealing with the fact depression is there and it can cause issues and stop me from doing things that are really easy, you know, sending an email and I'll sit there and stare at a screen for an hour because typing two paragraphs is somehow insurmountable. But that's not all the time. There's plenty of times where I can do things and I'm happy and I am not experiencing those crippling symptoms. And most people with depression will tell you it's not all the time, but when it's there, it is crippling. And it is something you always have to think about. You always have to say, I need to get past this moment to do the thing that needs to be done.
Jen, do you feel like for you specifically, obviously, and you're not speaking, you're not a monolith. Do you feel like for you, there are times where the OCD is quiet, or like, is it cyclical for you in any way? Are there triggers you know that you should avoid?
Yeah. So it's kind of, I mean, I would say that my OCD is still pretty severe. I'm hoping one day to get it to be mild. I don't think it'll ever go away. The intrusive thoughts will never go away. But I mean, currently, it just really depends. I mean, there's daily things that happen. So when I wake up in the morning, when I go to sleep at night, I have routines, that I have to do. And I have exposures that I currently am doing now to work on reducing the compulsions. But there's just, you know, there's just different things that trigger me and I don't always know when they're going to come up or what is going to have an issue. You know, with my husband, I mean, it's my OCD has been a source of discontent, you know, with our relationship, because it can I mean, it takes up all the air in the room. It's a joy stealer. We can be having like a really nice moment, relaxing and having a good time, and the OCD just sneaks in and just destroys that.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, like for example, I was, so one of the things I do for my mental health is I'll go for walks. So I'll go for runs. And I was going for a run and I saw a cat on my path. You know, some days that maybe wouldn't be an issue for whatever day, whatever reason for that day, the OCD was for me, like I have like, a theme of like rabies OCD, which, immediately I was thinking like, oh my God, this cat, like what if they have rabies? And so, you know, I kind of waited, the cat left, and I continued on the path, but for about 15, 20 minutes after that, I, was convinced, well, in my head, I was, you know, thinking, what if you didn't feel it, but the cat came back and scratched you or it bit you?
Yep. Yep. What if you somehow got it? You're the first person to ever get airborne rabies. What if you're the first person, you know, like, yeah, yep, yep.
And so, you know, I really wanted to stop. I wanted to, so the compulsion for me was I wanted to stop. I wanted to check my legs, make sure that I wasn't scratched. I wasn't bit. And then the next thing would be like reassurance seeking. So that would be Googling, what are the chances of me getting rabies from a cat? What are the transmission rates and things like that? And so I didn't do those things. But it was all consuming, for the rest of the run. I also just really wanted to go home and give up on this run. Because the thoughts and the risk and everything aren't necessarily real, but the emotions are.
Yes.
And when you're having these thoughts, even if they sound ridiculous, like the distress can get so high. It can just be just so intolerable. And so like, that's why the compulsions, like the need to do the compulsions can be so strong, because when you're stuck in an episode of OCD, it can just be so hard, and you just want relief. Like, you just want to do anything you possibly can so that you don't feel tortured anymore.
Yes.
And that's just, you know, and so that's why, I mean, especially why I, it's so irritating to me when people just say things like, I'm so OCD, because, you know, my OCD is debilitating. I struggle with it every single day. It affects my relationships. It affects every part of my life. It is not something that I would ever want to have. It's not a superpower. It's just.
Thank you. Yes. I feel really similarly about, with bipolar disorder and how, you know, and also my eating disorder. It is a thing that people are like, oh, you're recovered. It's like, I mean, yes, I don't use symptoms anymore, but also literally every day it is a battle. I have good days and bad days, but there are every single day, I guarantee there's a part of the day when my brain is trying to sabotage me, to make me go back. And it is a constant fight. If you were to give anybody, just as a closing here before we move on to five questions, if you were to give somebody who might be listening to this and going, this is sounding a little close to home. Are there resources? Is there like a subreddit, or is there a website you went to that really helped you in your early days when you were misdiagnosed and seeking proper diagnosis?
Yeah. So there's, I think it's called the International OCD Society, something like that. They have a webpage you can go to, and they have a lot of, you know, the common themes of OCD, which there are a lot. And you can go to and read that. I would highly encourage anybody who feels like they could potentially have OCD to do your own research. I think it's really great to, you know, write down what you can in a notebook, what the obsessive thoughts you seem to be struggling with, what the compulsions are. And then I would highly encourage, you can do Psychology Today. You can search for a therapist who has OCD as their specialty. And I would only go to a therapist who has OCD as their specialty, because with OCD, there's so many other techniques that could reinforce the OCD. And the really great thing about a lot of therapists today is they do telehealth, they can also do consultations with you. So you can have a meeting before you go to the therapist and you can talk to them and see if like their approach seems right to you. I would also say if you're seeing a therapist and you're starting to share your intrusive thoughts with them and they seem to not understand what those are, or they seem to be very judgmental of you, then that's not you. That's not on you. That's on the therapist, not
goddamn right.
Understanding of OCD. And I would encourage you to seek out a therapist who is going to be non-judgmental, because at the end of the day, you are not your thoughts. Thoughts that you have. And especially with OCD, because it's an ego dystonic disorder, these are thoughts that go against who you are, and that's why they're distressing. But definitely if you think that you have OCD, please seek help. Therapy is life-changing and life-saving for sure.
If this country and our medical system is going to make us pay so fucking much money to get medical care, I feel like we all deserve a therapist that fits with us and can actually help us.
And doesn't dismiss us.
So like I've literally thought this before as a way to justify finding good healthcare for myself sometimes, not necessarily mental health care, but like, if I'm going to have to fucking pay for this goddamn treatment, I'm going to see a doctor who actually gives a fuck.
For real. Like there's that, the whole like dump your boyfriend. Quit your therapist. Find a new therapist. Like, yeah. Genuinely, don't be there. Don't have therapy from someone who makes you feel worse about yourself. Legitimately, yeah. Jen, yeah. This was such an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for being so open and brave. Because I can only imagine that your brain was probably telling you not to do this and trying to keep you from it. And genuinely, we are so grateful to you for coming on the show and talking about this with us so openly. But yeah. It's time for 5 questions.
Whoa.
And so Jen has not answered our newest 5 questions. She's answered previous versions, but she hasn't answered our newest 5 questions. So, Nick.
Yeah.
Question one, please.
What is a game you've played recently that you really enjoyed?
Okay. So board game, I would say Ark Nova, which is it's a board game where you're you're running a zoo, you are trying to get prestige for the zoo and also like conservation points and stuff. It's both like fun and strategic, and it's got like a fun theme. And then like a Switch game, like I recently downloaded Persona 5 Royale. I really, really love. And so I've been replaying that on my Switch.
My kids have been playing Persona for about the last six months, every single version of it. So a lot of Persona going on in this house.
I used to love JRPGs, and it was like my genre of choice. And like, it's just not me anymore for whatever reason. But the Persona has such an incredibly dedicated fan base that like, I keep on getting tempted because they're like on Game Pass.
You've talked about it. Yeah.
I keep on thinking like, well, maybe I'll just try it. Like, like the people that like these games really fucking like these games. So yeah.
Exciting. Tim, question two.
Yeah. What's a science fact or discovery that you think is really fucking cool?
So I think like just different things with like botany, like just weird facts, like the fact that, bananas are slightly radioactive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or also I didn't know there's like a lot of scare tactics related to genetically modified food, but I think genetically modified food is awesome.
Like Honeycrisp apples.
Yeah, right, exactly. And just the fact that we're able to genetically modify something to, you know, like grow in more arid climates so that people can, you know, not die from
famine.
I think that's a really cool thing that we're
hell doing. Yeah. Like increased rice production. Like who can be mad about that? Come on.
There was a booth for like civilian nuclear energy advocates at Minnesota Pride. And at their booth, they had like an enormous fucking pile of bananas, and they were just giving bananas out to people. And like, as we walked by, they're like, bananas, bananas. And right away, I'm like, it's because they're radioactive. You'll get more radiation exposure from a banana than you would swimming in the cooling pool with reheated rods. And they're like, holy shit, who's this guy? Who's the fucking plant?
He's not a plant. He's just a guy.
But like, right away, I was like, that's fucking brilliant, because they're radioactive because of the potassium. Yeah, that's great.
Okay. Question three. If where do you get your sense of right and wrong from? Because we assume it isn't religion, but it may be from religion. So just where do you get your personal morality from?
Yeah. So, I mean, even though I grew up slightly, you know, religious and, you mm-hmm. know, I still have a pathway for religion, I don't think that I got my sense of right and wrong from religion. I think it was from, I guess, you know, I would society in general, but also I think just stories. I was an avid reader when I was a kid. So I just anything and everything I would read. And then I, watched like sci-fi and fantasy. So I think kind of things like that, where you're watching these stories of these, you know, heroes, like doing the right thing, you know, mm-hmm. despite, you know, these like immense odds. Like, I think that's where I got that from.
Absolutely. Take care of the little guy and fight the power. That's like the main theme of most of the books we've read.
Yeah.
Down with the Empire.
All right. Or
if you could build a robot to perfectly perform one chore or task for the rest of your life, what would you choose? And let's just assume that the robot works.
It's
great.
Magic.
It's we don't have to worry about whether or not a robot is capable of this task. It is.
Okay. Well, I guess related to the topic at hand, I suppose if there's something magical, it would probably be the robot would create a pill that I could take every day that would stop me from having OCD.
Oh, I love that, because it would be like a form, because there's not a lot of medicines that work for that. So it would be like a formula that for that day, you know, like for those days compulsions. Yeah.
It's a pharmacy bot.
Yeah, pharmacy bot. There you go.
That's great. That's great. And finally, question five.
Question number five. What is a movie or TV show you think everyone should watch?
Okay, well, so I have a kind of like modern answer and a sci-fi answer. The sci-fi answer would be Stargate SG-1, because I'm a Stargate girl. I love Stargate. You know, I like Star Wars, Star Trek as well, but I feel like Stargate doesn't get as much, you know, love in the fan, like the geek world as the other two. So I would
say show or the movie or both?
SG-1 is the show.
The show. Yeah.
I understood that, so Molly.
Stargate SG-1 and then Stargate.
I just was wondering how she felt about the movie.
I've seen the movie. The movies, you know, like it started it all, but no, the show is a special place in my heart.
All right.
I would say that. And then the other one I would say would be Fleabag.
It's so good.
Watching that the first time, especially, just like overwhelmed with like emotions. And I just think it's a really, really well done show. So
such a good show.
That started as a one woman fringe show at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
I think so.
Originally performed. You can find clips of her performing it on stage. We went to like a telecast performance of her last performance at a movie theater of it. And
it's great.
Surprising how much of the show works with one person on the stage sitting on a stool for the majority of the time.
Yeah.
So talented.
Fantastic. Jen, thank you so much for this. This was a wonderful episode, and it's been really great to talk to you today. Thank you so much for joining us. If you are just listening now and you want to help us out by supporting us on Patreon, you can do that. If you've never supported us on Patreon before, don't do it through your iPhone. Don't do the app. Go to those, like, Google, just Google Patreon 2024. There's some issues. They're charging more money. Just do it in a different way. But you don't have to support us at all. We just are so appreciative of you listening. If you want to answer our five questions, you can send them to 5questions@geeksthatgod.com, and we will read them on the air. Again, thank you so much to Jen. If you want to talk to us about your own mental health experiences, we welcome that. If you want to be on the show, you can also message us and talk to us about what you would be interested in talking about. We're always looking for new topics. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next Tuesday. Bye.
Bye. No jokes on this one. If you're experiencing mental health issues, there is help.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Need more Geeks Without God? Go to our website, read our blog posts, find us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks Without God. Social media!
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
I mean, I'll just say, I'm sorry I didn't say much, but I was just like, this is super interesting. I do not want to interrupt.